What's really important is how you're living, who you're living with, and how you're treating other people. And I feel like that is definitely something that I learned in Chicago.
Today's guest needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. You may know him as Conan O'Brien's former sidekick, and he's a surprise standout on season 34 of Dancing with the Stars. But there's a lot more to Andy Richter than late night banter in those sequined outfits. Today, we're going to dig deep into his Illinois upbringing and really get to know him. Andy, welcome to Enjoy Illinois. Let's go.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Well, first and foremost, you know this. I've told you, I am a huge fan of Dancing with the Stars, and I'm a Fandy.
Well, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yes, that's a new development that people who like me got a name for themselves.
I mean, it's perfect.
I guess. I still feel very weird about the whole thing. It's, you know, this is the thing. We Illinois people are very humble. And it, you know, and having a group of people name themselves after you is not a humble thing. It goes against my natural Midwestern humility. So,
well, I am loud and proud, Fandy. I voted for you so many times I lost count. I was like looking for my neighbor's phones and stuff like that. Like, Andy.
Thank you so much.
Fandy. Yes. So yeah. I'm a proud Fandy. And when when you were sent home, I was so crushed.
Well, honestly, I think it was for the best because those last 2 weeks were unbelievable, especially the finals week.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I don't know that my body could have taken it because I was already getting my knees drained and things like that. I will live a full life without a mirror ball. It would have been lovely to get a mirror ball, but I mean, there was no way I was going to beat Robert and Alex anyway.
So good. It was such a good season. And
it really was.
Oh my gosh. I was so hooked. You made it so far and you were a fan favorite. What did that mean to you?
A lot. Everything. It caught me completely by surprise. I mean, I've been on television for like 33 years. I mean,
yeah.
I first really got on television in a regular way in 1993. So I've been on TV a long time. I've been in front of people for a long time. People have known who I am for a long time. And I have never in my life experienced the kind of love and fandom and acceptance that I did when I was on Dancing with the Stars. It was at first I kept saying it's like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they open the ark and their faces melt. When I would look online at TikTok and see people dressed like me and, you know, groups of people cheering and crying when I got through, it was almost like too much. It was like, oh my God, I did not expect it. And I grew used to it because I grew used to it. I'm still incredibly grateful for it and still feel fairly humble about it. I would see people all the time, like, get him off. He's a terrible dancer. And they would say, it's called Dancing with the Stars. Dancing. And I would think, yeah, but it's with the stars.
Yeah.
It's not dancing with the technically proficient.
Right.
You know, it's not dancing with the amazingly skilled.
Yeah.
It's with the stars. You're forgetting the last part of it, which is why the show works.
You know, I'm such a Fandy that I came to see Dancing with the Stars when it was in Peoria.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because you were the host and it's all
in
Springfield. So, you know, it wasn't a far trip, but it was awesome. I loved when you did your opening and you talked about all of your ties across Illinois. I was like, oh my gosh, we have to try to get him on this podcast as a guest because I didn't know all the Illinois boy ties.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I've been there. I grew up there. I grew up in Yorkville. And I had my dad's family was in Springfield. So, I mean, I spent a lot of time down in Springfield. My grandparents lived two blocks from the state fair.
You're a true Illinois boy.
I am actually. I mean, I was born in Michigan, but that's just because my dad was finishing up his PhD and taught at Grand Valley State for a minute.
But most of your upbringing and formative years were in Illinois.
Absolutely.
So usually we wait till the end of the interview to do our Land of Lincoln lightning round segment. But I feel like since you're a trained improv artist, a smooth operating podcaster, we want to go straight to it and help our listeners plan their Illinois itineraries based on all your recommendations. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, buddy, let's jump in.
Okay.
What part of Illinois do you feel the strongest connection to?
Chicago. Because that's where, you know, I grew up in a small town, but I became aware in my teens that I'm not really a small town person. And I mean, there's the possibility that as I get older, I might move back to a small town, but I love living in a city. I, the stimulation of a city, the diversity of a city, it's very exciting and I thrive on it. So, yeah, and Chicago is still is such a great town. It is such a great, great city. So comfortable, so much to do, so livable, so pretty, so warm and welcoming. I and such great history and beautiful architecture. And then the lake, you know, just it's really is a great town. And it's not just pretty. Because, you know, there's other towns that are pretty and they don't feel very good. Chicago feels great. And I love meeting people, and I have throughout my life, who go to Chicago for the first time and go, wow, what a great town. I love Chicago. And I've never heard anybody say, Chicago. It's always, wow, love it. What a great city.
What is your favorite special occasion restaurant in Illinois?
Probably Berghoff's. It's a German restaurant downtown, and it's kind of one of the last standing German restaurants that's kind of really still German, and that you really get that kind of feel. And I just really equate that with Chicago, because even when I was a young adult and living there on my own, there were still so many German bars and German restaurants. And I think a lot of them are gone now.
Yeah.
But there was still a real German identity to the North Side. And you could go, and it really was, you know, good beer, good food, good schnitzel. That's very much a Chicago connection for me.
Great food, great environment, good location too.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about your top Illinois comfort food spot? I've got to wonder if College Andy liked to hit up, you know, like Papa Del's at U of I or anything like that.
Yeah, Papa Del's was good. I remember there was a college bar called, I think it was called Corcoran's maybe.
Mm.
And they would have cheese fries, and they were hand-cut fries. And on top of them, they would melt Merkt's, M-E-R-K-T, you know, the Wisconsin cheese dip stuff.
Yeah.
And those were pretty fantastic.
Well, what about a horseshoe?
A horseshoe, you're right there, too. You know, that's, you've got, but it's a different cheese. You know, that's like a rarebit cheese. This was like a gloppy, sharp cheddar, you know, heart attack maker, which, of course, when I was young, didn't matter. What's so great about Chicago, too, is Vienna beef stands. They're the same everywhere. You know, the hot dogs are the same. The Italian, you know, some places do it better than others. But even, you know, from Portillo's to the mom and pop places, they're all the same. And that, to me, too, is really Chicago, is those places.
Do you have a favorite outdoor space or natural area in Illinois?
I would say Starved Rock State Park. It's a beautiful park. A lot of people, they think of Illinois outside of Chicago, and they just think of cornfields and bean fields and highways and cornfields and bean fields. And, you know, and I can see why they would think that, but there's a lot of other like beautiful natural features. I mean, of course, mostly around the rivers, because then you get elevation changes. But Starved Rock, we used to go to when I was a kid, and I absolutely loved it.
Favorite Illinois artist or entertainer? You can say yourself for this one if you would like, but you're so humble, I don't think you would.
I don't think I would say that. I'm going to probably Bill Murray. Probably in terms of like having brought me enjoyment over the years, or beyond him, one of the blues guys, maybe Buddy Guy or Muddy Waters. Although, a lot of those blues guys weren't, they sort of made it big in Illinois. But yeah, I mean, the Chicago blues is pretty indelible. But I'd probably have to go with Bill Murray.
Okay. Good choice. And then last question in this round, what is something a first-time visitor simply should not miss?
Sweet corn.
Ooh.
The Illinois sweet corn, it is there is a difference.
Yeah.
It I go home and I almost, if it's in season, I insist that we get some.
Yes.
It is really the best in the world,
Love
and
it.
you notice a difference.
Yes, we got lots of street stands when sweet corn's in season that people can get their fix. It's
Yeah,
great.
yeah.
Okay.
And, because that, and that's, obviously there's hot dogs and deep dish pizza and
Yeah.
things like
Yeah.
that, but I would say sweet corn.
Good. Yes, the ag industry is strong here too. So
Yeah,
we
yeah.
appreciate that. So you have a long-running podcast called Three Questions with Andy Richter.
Yes.
And we're going to steal from it. I know you were born in Michigan, grew up in Yorkville, but tell us a little bit about your younger days in Illinois. Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Yorkville. I grew up in the same house that my mother grew up in. It was kind of under tough circumstances because it was, I lived there because my folks got divorced, and that was pretty tough. It was a happy childhood, and everyone did the best they could, but it was also, there was also a lot of sadness because with this, a single mom who, to be, for the first couple of years after her divorce was still kind of grieving and in mourning. So, but my grandma was there to take up the slack, which had its ups and downs.
Aw,
She
yeah.
was a wonderful woman, but a complicated one. My family specializes in complicated women.
Hey,
I mean, there's no better
y'all
kind.
have something. Yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way. They're my favorites. But I grew up there, learning how to be funny, and being funny and being from a funny bunch of people and having a lot of great friends and always learning very early on the value of laughter and how kind of necessary it is.
Was comedy something that you discovered, or is it something you turned to out of necessity because you were bored?
They're funny people. Like, my dad's really funny. My mom's older sister was really funny.
Yeah.
And so I grew up around funny people, making people laugh. And not just, us, they'd be out in the world and they'd be making everybody laugh. And
Yeah.
that, you see people with that power and that skill and that gift, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
And then I had it too. I was able to make people laugh. I found out early, I could, if I got my grandmother laughing at something I was doing, I could stay up later. It was, you could
Oh,
push off
yeah.
bedtime by keeping her entertained.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I was not I was not a troublemaker. I was not a rule breaker, but I was a wise ass.
Yeah.
And so I would get in trouble with teachers from just being a little too smart with
Yeah.
my mouth. But I did experience the amazing circumstance of having a teacher furious with you and then making them laugh while they're furious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it is like the sweetest cocktail you will ever drink. It was so good. And they'd be extra mad afterwards, but still, as a kid, you're always looking, you're so tired of being told what to do and having everything put over on you by adults that if you could put one over on an adult, even for a second, especially a teacher, it's
Yeah.
fantastic. So
An
that was always
empowering
a thrill.
moment. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then you went to U of I.
For 2 years. And then within a couple months, I realized I got a transfer. And so I looked, I couldn't afford New York or LA, which is where like the film schools were at the time. But, Chicago had Columbia College and they had a really good nuts and bolts kind of practical approach to teaching you how to work in a creative industry, which I really, a very Illinois approach to show business. Like, you got to learn how everything works.
Yeah, you needed to get the comedic training, the background. Chicago really helped you kind of change your world, right?
Yeah, because I got the education in film. I worked in film production, and then concurrent with that, I had known about improv. I had seen Second City touring company shows, and I kind of had the instinct that, because I have attention problems, attention deficit issues, and I have trouble, like, sitting down in front of a blank page to write is still daunting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this hunch, and also because, like I said, my smart aleckiness, I had a hunch that, because I wanted to act, I wanted to write, and I had a hunch that improv would be good for me because I would have to do both of them without thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I was 100% right. That was like a really good instinct, because I was able to kind of work on both those muscles at the same time. And I got to a point where I was doing, I don't know, 8 shows a week, doing hours and hours of comedy in front of people before, and not having any of it thought of beforehand. And if you can do that, you can do anything in showbiz, as a performer or as a writer. If you can handle that, you're
set.
Throw anything at somebody and they could do it, you know.
So where all did you train in Chicago on the improv scene?
I studied with Sharna Halpern and Del Close, and then all of the people that worked for them at mm-hmm. Improv, what was called then Improv Olympic, now called IO,
mm-hmm.
Because the actual Olympics sued them. Yeah.
Oops.
But Del, Del is the guru. You know, he's the Shakespeare of long form improv. I guess Shakespeare, but because he's more a teacher, he's
Yeah.
He's the Aristotle, I guess. But he taught a very particular kind of long form improv that was very sort of artistically pure and supposed to be kind of intellectually elevated, which I still agree with. I still is great. I mean, if you're going to go into show business, you can't be a complete egghead. You got to, eventually you got to sell burgers or whatever, but it was a good place to start. And there was a real emphasis on the work as opposed to the attention that the work would get you. So again, very Midwestern, very Illinois. Forget about the nonsense stuff. Think about the stuff that matters and the sustaining stuff, which is the work and also the people. It spoiled me to where I don't like being on stage by myself. I experienced so much wonderful time on stage with other funny people and got so much enjoyment out of that, that being on stage with myself and just getting laughs from a crowd, it's nice. So is, being on a boat. So is,
yeah,
looking out at a beautiful view. It's like, it's nice, but I'm not going to live here, But yeah. Being on stage with funny people.
Feeding off each other.
Or yeah. Being in a room with funny people. I mean, mm-hmm. There was plenty of nights, it being Chicago, where the boiler was broken, so we couldn't do a show because it was 30 degrees in the room. So we'd show up to do the show, find out the place is closed. We'd go to a bar and we'd still have fun. We'd still get to laugh and enjoy each other's company, but we didn't have an audience. But, we still were doing the same thing. We still were making each other laugh and making each other happy.
That's great. So did you also train at The Annoyance and at Second City?
Absolutely. Not Second City. I never did Second City, but at The Annoyance too. Okay. I did that too. Improv Olympic was first, and then Annoyance was kind of, I did alongside the Improv Olympic, which at the time was, there were stalwarts on both sides. There were people mm-hmm. like, what are you doing over there at that place?
Oh.
And I was like, look, I'm trying to learn this thing, and I can only think that learning from different places can only help, what you learn in one place is going to help you at the other, and vice versa. So I loved both places. You know, the annoyance is still there and still a very special place. The IO is still there and still a very special place. And still, and again, you know, that's a not a can't miss. That's one that you should not miss either. You know, is when you're there, see some long form improv, no matter where you do it.
That's a good call. So, with all the talent and all the comedic activity in Chicago when you were there, did you feel like you were in a special place at a special time?
I don't think I did. I mean, I knew I was having fun, and I knew that I was that I had come from, you know, as I kind of mentioned, I got into my teen years and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know, I felt like even though I was popular and I had friends that I loved, I still, there was this feeling of like, ah, this isn't right for something's wrong. I didn't fit in. And I went to U of I and it got a little better because it was a little bigger. I got to film school and I was like, oh, and I got around like, you know, artsy kids with, you know, fingernails painted black, listening to The Cure. And I was like, oh, okay, this, you know, these are sort of more my people. Yeah. And then when I got to improv, it was like, my tribe. These are my people. And it really, truly was. And I think I was just so excited about that. And when I think back about, you know, the value of that time and what was valuable to me, I don't think about the stage. I think about parties at people's houses. I think about like I had friends that rented the house next door to the fire station outside of Wrigley Field. They lived in the bottom floor of it was a two flat house, and would just go sit in their front yard during Cubs games and just laugh, just make each other laugh. And so, and you know, but a lot of those people are now, you know, if not household names, really well-known comedic talents and writers. And you know, they we a bunch of us figured out how to make this work and do it for a living. And so that, I mean, I was only, it was only in retrospect that I became aware of like how like how special it was. I knew at the time it was fun, and I knew at the time that it made me really happy and fulfilled me in a way that I had never experienced before. But I wasn't like thinking like I'm around geniuses. I just thought I
Yeah.
love my friends.
You were just like living your life and trying to figure out what you were going to do, what you were going to be, right?
Yeah, pretty
Yeah.
much.
Kind of a college student. Were there any performers that you worked with in those days that really impressed you or really had an impact on you?
Yeah. I mean, there were people, the people that there were people that who's, you know, like Amy Sedaris. I used to see her and she still, I still am amazed by her. There are people that just have like special brains. It was towards the end of my time in Chicago, but the United Upright Citizens Brigade started then. And there was a guy there, Adam McKay. Who's gone on to direct, you know, he was a Will Ferrell's creative partner and directed a lot of really funny, excellent movies. He had an amazing, massive brain.
Moving ahead to the late night days, you spent 7 years as Conan's sidekick. Then you walked away at the height of it to go out on your own.
Yeah.
What prompted that decision, and what did you learn about yourself in doing that?
I had honestly just grown bored with doing the same thing. I was still young enough, still ambitious enough to think I've already enjoyed this good fortune. Let me see if I could trade up. They set me up with a lot of sort of coffee dates with a lot of comedy writers to pitch themselves to me as to, you know, to be the showrunner for my show. And there was this guy, Victor Fresco. He had this idea for a show in which I played a writer who would tell a story, but could also like be an unreliable narrator and sort of, you know, back up the story and tell it how it really happened. And I really liked that. I liked him. And so that became Andy Richter Controls the Universe. And so I got that going.
How closely did you identify with your character, the daydreaming writer who was stuck in a corporate job?
Not much,
Not much.
honestly.
Yeah.
Not much, because especially too, I had a kid by that point. So
Ah.
I was already kind of starting dad mode. So like the young, single, innocent, naive guy who couldn't, it was sort of too shy to take the reins of his life. I was like, nah, that's, I mean, I'm not a world grabber, but
Yeah.
I certainly
Yeah.
I'm not shy either. At least not in that department.
You returned to the sidekick side of the business when Conan was given the Tonight Show in 2009.
He asked me to come back, and I was
Yeah.
happy to go back to
Sweet.
making TV every night.
How did you change in the time you came back?
By that time, I had two children. I was older. I didn't have that. I was not. I didn't have that ambition. I had come out. I was curious about what's it like to be number one. I mean, and by that I mean number one within the show structure. I was kind of number two with Conan, and so I was number one in Andy Richter Controls the Universe. And then I did a show called Quintuplets, which I didn't have a writing say in. I was just an actor on it, but I was number one on the call sheet there. And then I did Andy Barker, and I was number one there. And so I'd been number one, and I realized I don't care about being number one. Number one is not, I don't thrive on being number one. So I'm happy to go back to work for Conan, whom I love, who I know. And again, too, the immediacy of making a show like that, if you just want to make stuff, there's nothing like it.
So let's go back to talking about your podcast, Three Questions with Andy Richter. You focus on just three questions. I love how simple that is. Where are you
Yeah.
from? Where are you going? What have you learned? How'd you come up with those three questions?
I would have really fun conversations and really good conversations with people after Conan was done talking to him in the commercial breaks. And especially people that I knew and people that I didn't know so well. And I always enjoyed finding out sort of more the nuts and bolts of their life and like, where are you from? What did your parents do? That kind of thing. Because nobody asks Harrison Ford, what did your parents do? What kind of kid were you? I mean, not to my knowledge. Somebody probably has, but and also too, I have been in a lot of therapy. I believe in therapy 100%. It has it's probably takes the place of what religious faith takes in a lot of people's lives. I believe in therapy as a healing force, as a sense of progress, as a way to get to know yourself, a way to feel useful, and to just get better at being alive. And I felt like those three questions kind of encompass what therapy is kind of trying to do, which is you look at yourself and where you come from, who you are, how you came up in the world, and then you kind of process, how did I get to be the person I am, and what do I want to be in the future? And I just, and that was kind of just the gimmicky framework of what the podcast was. And they're not, I don't stick to them like as a strict thing. It's just kind of a thematic thing. And honestly, these days, I've been doing it for 7 years now. Sometimes it's not the three. It's just blabbing. It's just talking, especially with funny people, just being funny and shooting the breeze with funny people. But I do love doing it, and it wasn't something that I ever thought I would do. I never thought like I want to learn how to interview people for an hour. But I have, and I like it, and I think it's a really good show, and I think I've really learned how to do this thing pretty well. And also I don't want people to spill their guts and like divulge secrets and
Yeah.
alienate themselves from their loved ones for my content. But I do like it when people can be introspective and be unashamed to kind of be who they are and say who they are and not worry about what somebody's going to think about what they're divulging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do think that, because I do think it's useful. I think it's interesting for people. It's something, when I started, I was on a couple of podcasts in the early podcast days where I talked about mental health and I talked about dealing with depression. And I had so many, and I'm not one to think like, oh, if only people could learn from my journey, you know, just that kind of BS show busy celebrity thing. But there were so many people that came up to me and were so thankful and grateful that I had talked about it in a way that wasn't secret and shameful. People coming up and going, hearing you on that made me go to therapy. And I know I should have gone to therapy, but I was always ashamed, or I thought my parents would, you know, not like it, but I enough is enough. I went, and I'm so grateful to you. I mean, and that's crazy. That's wonderful, you know? And that's, again, it's like, we're like, oh, okay. Just sharing is doing something good.
You've had a number of Illinois entertainers on your podcast over the years, Jim Gaffigan, Natasha Leggero, Jake Johnson. Is there a common thread that connects you with them?
Yeah, Midwesternism, I think. Yeah, they all kind of have that down-to-earth vibe. A lot of improv comedians come from there because it's just Chicago is a fertile ground for it. Chicago and Canada, for some reason. I kind of sometimes feel like Canada is just a big Chicago.
Go to Chicago. The weather is better. Yeah. Okay, so you live in L.A. now.
Yes,
you spent a lot of time in New York. Yes, okay,
yeah.
Pasadena. And you've spent a lot of time in New York. You still think of yourself as an Illinoisan?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I lived in New York for a good long time, and that was where my first child was born. And so, you know, I don't feel like I'm just from one place anymore. It's, you know, as an example, I've lived here now for 25, 26 years in Los, you know, uninterrupted in Los Angeles. And I like baseball, and I'm a Cubs fan, and I grew up a Cubs fan. But I became being a Cubs fan was forced on me. When you're a kid, you don't have any choice. And my stepdad had season tickets, so we went to the game all the time. And my attention span, you know, by the fourth or fifth inning, I'm ready to go. But, you know, because I'm a little kid. But I'm out here, and there's the Dodgers. And, you know, people would take me to Dodgers games. And I'd start to, you know, the Dodgers are on TV here, you know. And
yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's before the years where you can watch whatever baseball game you want to. So I kind of was like, all right, I have two teams. And there are people who say, you can't do that. That's not fandom. And I say, I can do whatever I want because I am a grown up. But I still do find when they play each other, I think I lean Cubs.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to test it and to know that you are really an Illinoisan at heart, because you still root for the Cubs when you're in L.A.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's special.
And honestly, when I come home, there is a sense of when I come home and see my family, and they're all out in Geneva, Batavia now, which, by the way, for anybody listening to this, Geneva is a beautiful town. If you're in western suburbs, Geneva is a gorgeous town. They shot The Road to Perdition there. So if you've ever seen that movie, it's a beautiful river town in Illinois and has very much its own old feel. They're all out there now. And just when I go visit them and drive around, I feel there is a sense of, you know, and I just love how green it is, because I miss green. I just miss it's, you know, L.A. is green, but it's green because it's watered. You know, L.A. on its own is brown. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point when my work isn't so sort of geographically focused that I don't end up back in Illinois at some point. Yeah.
Last question. What's the Illinois thing that you carry with you the most? What has the state given you that you take everywhere?
I mean, we've touched on it a bunch, but I would say it's like a sense of proportion, a sense of like what's important. And to really kind of level out your expectations of what life is about and what you should be doing. Because especially in show business, there's a lot of stuff that can catch your eye and that you can think like, oh, the red carpet is, you know, who's asking me questions. And you're around a while and you find out that stuff is virtually meaningless, you know. And And now it's, you know, now the new thing is sort of follower counts. And like, yeah, it's nice to have a high follower account, but what's really important is how you're living, who you're living with, and how you're treating other people. And I feel like that is definitely something that I learned in Chicago. And I learned, you know, feet planted firmly on the ground. And yeah. Not easily swayed by some shiny thing that comes along. Like,
yeah.
Remember who you are and remember what the point of everything is.
That's amazing. Andy Richter, Illinois made you, and we are so grateful that it did. If you want to hear more from Andy, you're in luck. You can find his podcast, The Three Questions with Andy Richter, anywhere you listen. And something tells me we have not seen the last of him on Dancing with the Stars, both the TV version and the live show. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Enjoy Illinois, Let's Go, produced by the Illinois Office of Tourism. I'm your host, Katie Sheehan, and we hope to see you soon here in the land of Lincoln. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and pretty much anywhere you like to listen. When you're ready to start exploring, head to enjoyillinois.com, your one-stop shop for trip inspiration, destination guides, and much more.